You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Ever see an idea so clearly in your head but struggle to make it real? We've all been there. With Wix, you can build a website for your business just the way you pictured it. Get the best of both worlds with AI and drag-and-drop tools all in one place. Stay in your creative flow and use AI when you want, how you want. Create a website your way. Try it out at Wix.com.
Merkel Media.
Start looking at people like they don't matter. I'm waking up to the fact, more than a little bit shallow. I'm lost in this hole, but I don't wanna. I'm lost in this hole, 'cause I'm just trying to
what's good, everybody? This is Joel Thomas, and this is Free the Rabbits. And how are all the free-range rabbits doing out there today? Before we start with this week's episode, make sure you smash the like button if you're on YouTube, subscribe, hit the notifications, and share the episode. If you're on Rumble, do the same thing. If you're on any other podcast platform, make sure you're giving a 5-star review. Make sure you're leaving a review any place that you can do it and share the show. That's the best way for this entire podcast to get out there, is to share the show. All right, guys, let's get into the episode. All right, guys, we're going to jump right into it today, and we're going to start talking about algorithms. And I've done some stuff in the past where I talked about what algorithms do in the modern world, how they equate to the spiritual world. And I really wanted to do a deep dive on what algorithms are as far as just the computer systems themselves, how they operate within the context of how they drive us through media and other mediums that they give us, plus talk about the impact of AI and what it is bringing upon us, and to let you know that the AI algorithms have actually been around for much longer than people think. I know that we talk about AI like it just happened yesterday or 4 years ago, and maybe in the mainstream sphere of what we're capable of getting our hands on, but it's been used in government structures, media structures like news for a long time. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that today. And in this two-parter today, I'm basically going to talk about the human interaction between us and AI and what AI may be trying to replace with these algorithms. And then part two, I'm actually going to talk more about the paranormal and spiritual aspect of that interconnectivity within AI structures and algorithms, and how that could also be driving us to a completely different outlook and kind of married to this first part of the human interaction to the algorithm or the AI algorithms. And I think it's important to take a look at that and understand how long it's been happening and how long that they've been manipulating the media structure with these algorithms, and not necessarily for the bad either. Some of it's born out of simple A to B. We want to get you the product in as much quantity and as fast as possible because consumers consume daily. We consume all the time, especially when it comes to media. We wake up consuming. We literally, what do we do when we wake up? We jump and get right on our phones and look at what's happening, scroll for 15, 30 minutes before we even get our day started. At least generally speaking, that's how a lot of people are. So what's the fastest way for these media companies to get you the information? Well, it doesn't work like it used to when you had journalists, when you have editors over journalists. It takes time. Even the fastest journalist can put together an article in 7 to 8 minutes, which I will talk about today, a specific incident where they put a journalist up against an AI journalist and how that each side did in this particular contest and what was taken out of it and what the media companies looked at when they looked at this contest between the two in saying that, okay, there's a creative aspect that is kind of lost with the AI, but when it comes to stats-driven models, it's actually the best model. But that also causes a lot of issues. Not only does it stifle the creativity of creators, but it also allows for manipulation to be set within these algorithms, these parameters that whoever is writing the coding for set algorithm for this AI structure, even if it's an evolving AI, there are still parameters that are set and certain things become flagged. We'll talk a little bit about fact checkers today too. I think, and I'll say this because I see a lot of comments online and I've seen comments online for the better part of, I don't know, 15 years, and I've watched those evolve too as well. And when fact checking became very prevalent, really in 2020, not that it wasn't there before, but 2020 is when it really hit with the fact-checking models that you see popping up on Instagram, TikTok, or wherever, right? Generally speaking, you're going to see it on TikTok, or I know X has their readers say that they add to it or whatever. But I think that a lot of people, because I see the comments, are misguided by what fact-checkers actually are. I see the comments. Boy, these fact checkers, you know it's true if they're doing it. You know those people sitting at home, a bunch of Karens sitting in front of a computer just ready to get us, ready to stop the truth. It doesn't work that way. They're not people. Just like the large quantity of comments that you see on posts, on videos, aren't actual people. And I think we have to start realizing what's actually going on within these structures for us to be able to maneuver accordingly. You know, it's very easy to see something and just believe it on face value. And that's even for the open-minded critical thinker. We can get just as much caught up in the trap of these algorithms. And this also leads back to the very first episode that I dropped on here, the Cass Sunstein effect. Algorithms and computer AI is also connected to this Cass Sunstein effect. You want to control a set group of people, you set parameters within these algorithms, within these AI programs to box people in, to see where they're at. Oh, all these people believe in this thing. Well, we know where they are. We know how to manipulate it. We know where we want to get them to move into what we want them to believe about a said subject. We might throw the most bizarre conspiracy theory or whatever else in this set group of people, but because of the algorithms in place that have monitored them, we know exactly how to tap into their emotions to where they'll react a certain way. You know, X has been known to create what they call subset rooms within the program itself. So depending on what you like, what you comment on, what you interact with, they will box you into a quote unquote room where you're receiving a certain type of information. Sometimes this information is sent to you to get you riled up. It'll be the exact opposite of what you think because the algorithm knows exactly what you think. So they will send a piece of information so it will get you emotionally distraught to where you start reacting to that piece of information. And now the algorithm's set. Now it's getting to more people that are in your room. And now you've got a long comment thread where people are arguing with each other. And half of them aren't even real people. They're bots. And I will talk about that today. The percentage of bot comments, bot likes, bot accounts that interact with people that aren't like your, you know, bots that people buy from overseas to inflate their numbers. You know, you got people that want to inflate their follower numbers or inflate their likes or inflate their comments. So they'll buy these bots. No, no, no. I'm talking about bots that work within the constructs of what social media is today, whether it's YouTube, Rumble, Instagram, TikTok, X, we go down the list. There are a large quantity of bots that are just generated. It's not like there's a human generating them. They're generating themselves. The AI is evolving. It's creating accounts to argue with you. And sometimes the bots are arguing with themselves. They can't even understand that it's a human, so they'll end up arguing with themselves. And we get caught up in the fray. We're so easily tricked, so easily confused to not really understand what these algorithms are set to do. And today, we're going to talk about specifically algorithms in media, AI in media, how it's stifling creativity, but also creating a faster method for them to get information to you. And again, they write these programs to be able to understand what you like, what you want to interact with, and they will write even articles that will cater to you in that way. And it's wild to think about, but this has been going on for at least 15 years that we know about, longer. And people don't even realize that the majority of media, the majority of articles that you see, that you read in any context, it doesn't have to be just your political news, but it could be sports, entertainment, any of these subsets are being written by AI journalists. It's quicker. They can do it in like 30 seconds to a minute. Write a whole article about something and cross-reference statistics, especially when it comes to sports. You know, it's funny. I always see people online, and especially when ESPN will put out some crazy stat about a baseball player or a basketball player or football player, whatever sport, and it'll be, this person hasn't hit 3 home runs on a Sunday, with it being partially cloudy, when 5 birds fly by, and the person in the third row is eating a hot dog. And like, man, I tell you what, ESPN, those guys back there are looking for everything. It's not people. It's the AI. It's the algorithm. They can find all of these different correlations and put them together to create these statistics. Now, granted, they're not going to be like a human and be able to look at these statistics and how that they connect and how they work together. They're just going to be able to show you that these statistics are happening at the same time. And I believe that's where the AI is still trying to evolve. It can't decipher that yet, and I'm just saying yet. And we will talk a little bit about that too, about how the algorithm works when it's compiling information and information that's happening at the same time. It still today takes a human being to be able to look at the information and see objectively if the information is connected or not. Because I could say every time Tom Cruise puts out 3 movies a year, that it rains June 1st in the Amazon rainforest. That's just an example. It's probably raining all the time. So, but just an example, the AI algorithms will pick up stuff like that. But those two things don't necessarily connect. But what happens is the AI algorithms will find these correlations, and then a human being will come and look at it and say, oh, wait a minute, these two things actually connect. Let's look at this deeper and find this layer of why is this cause and effect happening? And to that point, algorithms are good. It's not like algorithms are bad or AI is necessarily bad, but the structure in which it's being set up is to create a culture of us not working, us not having to work. You know, AI jobs are taking over. We're talking about media and journalism. They don't need a lot of journalists anymore. Not to say that there aren't some, but AI algorithms can even be editors over an entire media company. Now, granted, they're going to want some sort of human who can be able to decipher, like I said, between the connectivity between things. But at the end of the day, the AI algorithms are evolving. They're moving into a space where they're able to do more and more like human beings. So an algorithm in mathematics and computer science is a finite sequence of mathematically rigorous instructions typically used to solve a class of specific problems or to perform a computation. Algorithms are used as specifications for performing calculations and data processing. More advanced algorithms can use conditionals to divert the code execution through various routes and deduce valid inferences, referred to as automated reasoning, achieving automation eventually, which that last piece, deducing valid inferences, which is automated reasoning, and it's achieving automation eventually. So that's the evolution of the AI, the algorithm, or as far as computing goes, because algorithms aren't just computer-based, right? Algorithms have been around for a long time. I mean, we can talk about ancient algorithms, Babylonian mathematics, 2500 BC, Egyptian mathematics, 1550 BC, Indian mathematics, 800 BC. We got the Efa Oracle around 500 BC, Greek mathematics. All this is BC, and we've found out about these algorithms through tablets that were found, Mesopotamian tablets. We get the Sumerian clay tablet found in Shurippak in near Baghdad. That was dated 800 to 2500 BC, and it was the earliest division algorithm. So any kind of math, and not just math, because you could even look at a cookbook as an algorithm, because you're using a set of instructions to achieve an end goal. Essentially, that's what an algorithm is. It's coding to complete a task. So just to get that out there about what an algorithm really is, but generally speaking, when people hear algorithm now, they're talking about a computing algorithm, which you're not wrong. And even just the basic definition, which I just gave you, it does really put heavily on the idea that algorithms are generally thought of as computer-based. Now, one of the first guys to really put the concept of an algorithm as far as computing goes into place was Alan Turing, and he was an English mathematician, computer scientist, logician, cryptanalyst, philosopher, and theoretical biologist. Now, he was highly influential in the development of theoretical computer science, and he provided the formalization of the concepts of algorithm and computation with the Turing machine, which was the first model of a general-purpose computer. And if you've ever seen a Turing machine, and I'm going to put a picture up here of it, it's a mathematical model of computation. It's an abstract machine that manipulates symbols on a strip of tape according to a table of rules. So it kind of looks like an infinite string of tape that keeps scrolling through, and it's got different discrete cells, and each can hold a symbol drawn from a finite set of symbols called the alphabet of the machine. Now, there are some Turing machines that you'll see with a finite tape that they end, but the true Turing machine is on an infinite loop that never halts. So it's just basically a piece of tape that's wrapped up, and it just keeps going, and it computes whatever that you are trying to compute. essentially. That's just the layman's way of saying what a Turing machine is. Now, not only did he come up with the Turing machine, but he came up with the Turing test, which Alan Turing originally called the imitation game. And he came out with this in 1950. And it's a test of the machine's ability to exhibit intelligent behavior equivalent to or indistinguishable from that of a human. Turing proposed that a human evaluator would judge natural language conversations between a human and a machine designed to generate human-like responses. So what this Turing test is, you're matching up a computer who is trying to mimic human traits or human abilities next to a human who's doing the same exact traits or abilities. And you will have other humans who will judge the test based on whatever criteria it is and that you're testing specifically. And if this AI, which now would be considered more AI, artificial intelligence in the sense of really trying to mimic human behavior, if it's indistinguishable between what the human does, then it passes this Turing test. So the Turing test is a test to see whether the AI or computer program can mimic a human to the point that other humans can't decipher between the two. And that test is very important because they use it a lot right now, because what they're trying to teach artificial intelligence to do is to evolve to the point to where it can mimic emotions, that it can start deciphering slang better to the point that it sounds more human-like. Again, it's not there yet. And when we talk about on the second part of this series about algorithms, when we start talking about entities that could be connected to these AI programs or to these computer programs, you're going to get more of that. That's where the Turing test is blown out of the water, because you'll have people who are performing this Turing test and it starts really acting like a human and starts emoting emotions to the point that, is the AI alive? And they're not wrong to say that it is alive. I just don't believe that it's alive in the way that the AI itself has evolved to have consciousness. Now, do I think that AI itself is evolving? Absolutely. And I think it's going to get very close to human emotions. It already has. We're going to talk about what the military-industrial complex, what the sex market, beauty market is using AI for, and how they want to replace humans in some of these specific areas. And it just makes for better control. It keeps people happy because they're boxed in their little boxes where they don't have to interact with anybody else because they're only interacting with the AI. If you're in the military-industrial complex, if you've got AI soldiers working for you, they're just going to do what the program's telling them to do. Now, do I think it could turn into something like Terminator? I don't know. Does the AI become self-aware to the point that it takes us over? Maybe. I think that we're going to get into that in the second part of this series, where we talk about the entity angle and how that could manipulate the AI into taking over control. I just don't know if the computer program itself becomes self-aware like that. I'm not throwing it out of the realm of possibility, but I lean way more heavily into the entity angle, which again, I'll deal with on the next episode. Today, we're going to talk about the human interactions with AI and algorithms and how they can manipulate and control us into getting us to do what they want us to do, or what other humans would like us to think or do. They train the algorithm to keep us either in boxes or hurt us in a specific direction so that we obviously move by emotions. So we see something, we react on it, and they know that by that reaction, they know how to move accordingly. They either tweak the algorithm or we're moving in the direction they wanted us to in the first place. Now, there's different types of algorithms, and we won't go into the descriptions for all those today. We've got the encryption algorithm, brute force algorithm. We've got randomized algorithms, sorting algorithms. That's going to sort the information to get it to said people in the way that the people who create the program would like us to see it. We've got search engine algorithms, which obviously Google, DuckDuckGo, I mean, it's just two off the top of my head. You got several, Bing, whatever. Those are your search engine algorithms, which are evolving constantly too. And that's just a handful of 10, 11, 12 main algorithms that are talked about, but we really want to get into the idea that AI is trying to bypass creativity. And will robots replace journalism? And the answer is yes. And this is actually the title of an article that Andriy Mir is a media researcher and journalist from Russia. He authored The Viral Inquisitor and other essays on post-journalism and media ecology in 2024. He actually wrote The Media After Trump, Manufacturing Anger and Polarization in 2020. And his main book was Human as Media, The Emancipation of Authorship, and explores the phenomena of emancipated authorship and its effect on society. So essentially, the AI algorithms taking over journalism and how that, yes, it can pump out a large quantity of articles and information out to people, but it's also very easy to control because you're setting parameters around it to where it's going to get out the information in a specific way. And a lot of times, a very manipulative way, or with some sort of hidden agenda that keeps all of the media moving down the same tunnel. Have you ever seen those videos online where all these different media sites, whether it's Fox, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, those are just some of the larger ones, but you got a lot of smaller ones too, where they're all reporting on a specific subject and they all say the same thing? Have you ever seen those videos where people match up like 20, 30 different ones and they're saying the exact same thing in the same cadence and you're like, what is going on? It's freaking me out. It's AI. That's an algorithm that has written this piece of journalism for these reporters or journalists to purvey to you on the screen. That's why it all sounds the same. They're all getting it from the same place, from the same source. And yes, all of these media companies generally have their own programs that they build in-house, but it's still all connected because these algorithms are pulling from the same parameters, the same information spaces that these other algorithms are. They're just spewing out the same thing. That's why it all sounds the same. Journalism's basically dead. I just want people to understand that. People think that these journalists are out to manipulate us, that these big bad corporations, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, any of the big names are out to get us. These people are sitting there with their little puppet strings to a point. But there's also this giant algorithm piece to it that we don't talk about enough. This AI-generated algorithm that is pumping the information out per statistics and parameters that are given to it. So yes, they're all putting out the same information. Now, granted, Fox may have different parameters than CNN or MSNBC because they want to get it out from a specific angle, you know, the right-left paradigm. They want to get it out in a specific angle, but it's still coming from a similar source. They'll just twist it a little bit different because of the algorithm, the parameters. These journalists aren't journaling. And that's not a word, but they're not journaling. Not anymore. They're given stacks of paper before they get on TV by something that an AI-generated program wrote for them to say. Now, that's dangerous because the AI programs aren't going to look at it from a critical lens. They're going to look at it from the set of parameters that have been given to it. So it's going to skew the information. Even if the AI doesn't have emotion behind it, it's still going to skew the information to what the parameters have been given to it to do. I just want to put that out there because I believe people are very confused about who's giving us the information. Yes, people are setting up the parameters and the algorithms, but they're not the ones tricking us per se. It's the algorithm. It's like the journalist that gets on television. They're just reading off what some AI journalist gave them. They're not even looking into it. Like I said, journalism's dead. Real journalism is pretty much dead. You got a few people out there who are trying to find the truth, but we know how that goes for a lot of them. Let's just start looking at this a little differently. Like I said earlier about the fact checkers, they're not real people. While you're doing what the conspiracy theorist community does, gets caught up in the buzzwords, these fact checkers, I know that it's true because if they're going against it, it's true. Maybe. Or maybe it's an AI-generated program that is seeing the information and putting up against other parameters to say that this isn't true. I can tell you that right now. Listen, I run several social media accounts, and they tend to be in the conspiratorial truther circle. So we run into these issues from time to time where stuff gets posted and it gets flagged almost immediately. Within 10 seconds to 15 seconds, it's flagged. And you're like, how did that happen? It's not a person doing it. It's an AI-generated program that has put it up against other posts that have been in the same similar situation, and it's flagged as misinformation. So they're going to flag it. They're going to pull it. They're going to give you a warning, whatever they do. Now, a lot of times, because I run these accounts, I can dispute it, appeal it, and I'd say 80% of the time, it gets taken away. Because then you have a real person who comes in and looks at it objectively. I'll give you an example. There was a set of pictures that went around earlier this year, into last year, I can't remember. And it looked like a green laser beam that was hitting a volcanic mountain. Now, the original headline was that it was a meteor hitting this mountain. Now, if you look at the pictures, and these were put out in pretty much every mainstream outlet, it doesn't look like a meteor. I'm not saying that it's not, but it looks like something is being shot out of the sky into the hole at the top of this volcanic mountain. Now, I decided to use this as a post to connect it to possible UFO activity, fallen entity activity. I wasn't even thinking about the possibility of direct energy weapons at all. That wasn't even part of the post, even though I know what they are and I know they exist. I mean, that's per the government that they exist. That wasn't where I was going with the post. So I make the post. About 15 minutes later, bam, gets hit. And it gets hit for what? Direct energy weapons. This is not a direct energy weapon. This is a meteor, which I specified in the post that it actually was a meteor. Or at least that's what the mainstream said, but also correlated to, you know, UFO activity, whatever else. I just kind of put it out there as a way for people to make their own decision. Now, that wasn't a person that did that. The issue was that that picture had already been circulating all over the place. And 90%, 95% of the people that posted it, at least in the, you know, I hate using this word, truther community, were saying that it was a direct energy weapon. So now the algorithms learn just to see that picture and automatically flag it without even understanding the context of what was being said in the caption. Now, again, a lot of stuff's appealable and you can go appeal it. I just want to put that out there for the content creators that are in that particular niche. In some ways, the algorithm's against you. And I get that part of it. Now, I don't agree with all of it. Sometimes you're not getting shadow banned. The content's just not that good. And we all have to look at ourselves sometimes and say, maybe I'm not putting out great content. I've been there. Like, for sure. Might not be putting out the best content. And I got to shake it up. Hey, this isn't working anymore, or this isn't working. Let me try something else. But sometimes the algorithm can be against you because the parameters are set for a specific thing. It's set to look out for that. It's not somebody sitting behind a desk looking and scrolling, but you got people, a lot of people that think that's what's going on. No, the majority of media is run by computers. I want to really say that so it sinks in. The majority of media is run by computer algorithms. That's just a fact. That's not a theory that is in the mainstream. I've read articles from Forbes, CNN, Fox, all of them. They'll tell you that. Now, they want to hide the amount, the percentage. But I'll give you some percentages. This is in 2016. Now, this is back to this paper that Andrew Meir wrote. And he gives us some percentages and some facts. In 2016, Wordsmith, which is one of the two most powerful news writing algorithms, wrote and published 1.5 billion news stories. This number is comparable to or may even exceed work written and published by human journalists. Robo-journalists' skills and competencies are constantly growing. Research has shown that readers sometimes cannot differentiate between news written by robots or by humans. And more importantly, readers often make little of such distinctions. That goes back to that so much consumption that you're essentially brainwashing yourself to the point that you can't even tell the difference between AI in a human being writing something. Now, we will talk a little bit today about the Turing test and how that there were noticeable differences, but not to the point to where you could differentiate it. You would just say that those people were using different writing styles. And that's kind of where people are at right now. Again, for the most part, real journalism is dead. They need to be able to get the information out quickly and in quantity, because that generates the ad revenue back that they can pump back into the company so people can make money. And you've got multi-billion dollar corporations and CEOs driving around in Lamborghinis. So we're talking about percentages. And I brought up the bots earlier. Now check this out. Imperva Inc. is an American cybersecurity software and services company which provides protection to enterprise data and application software. Now every year, they do an annual bad bot report. It's a global analysis of automated bot traffic across the internet. So in 2022, the report revealed that 47.4% of all internet traffic came from bots. That was a 5.1 increase over the previous year. The same report showed that human traffic at 52.6% decreased to its lowest level in 8 years. Now that was 2 years ago because it's 2024. It's mind-blowing to think, and I remember there's another report that was done in 2016, and I think the percentage was higher then. I know it dipped and then it went back up. I know it's increasing again, but I remember there was, I think it was StatsMonkey said that there was about 70% of all comments and interactions were bots online. It's the algorithm has taken over. I talked earlier about bots arguing with themselves. You'll see it. It's not even people. And listen, they'll look like people. They'll have followers. They'll have posts. It's not always distinguishable to where you know if it's a real person or not. Could be bots. And you're wasting your time arguing with a bot on a post at least 50% of the time. 47.4%. That was 2 years ago. Travel, retail, and financial services experienced the highest volume of bot attacks. Gaming and telecommunications had the highest proportion of bad bot traffic on their websites and applications. Gaming was at 58.7%. Telecommunications was 47.7%. We're talking about travel, retail, and financial services. They were ranging anywhere from 12 to 24%. These are bots. And they're not just the bots in your comments that are liking, interacting, even with themselves. They're also hacking into your finances. This is just AI-generated bots. This isn't bots that people create, or it's a hacker hacking into your stuff. Not to say that doesn't exist, because we know it does. These are bots. Bots with their own agendas. They're working within a space of parameters, but they've leveled up to a point to where they're working on their own. Well, think about that. Almost 50% of internet traffic is bots. Something to think about whenever we're consuming, whenever we're reacting emotionally to something. Is it even real? And I think that helps me out with that whole go outside, touch grass, get your tail out of the hole. A lot of this stuff we're consuming isn't even real. We need to interact with reality. I'm not saying that you can't have a Facebook account or Instagram account or be a content creator or work within the space of AI. I'm not saying that all AI is bad. There's a generalized good part of it that helps us be able to create quickly, that helps us be able to get things out quickly. You know, it's us working in conjunction with it. But at the same time, we have to be leery and careful, because a lot of these government-funded programs that are creating these algorithms don't have our best interests at heart. I don't think they do. And I don't think a lot of people listening to this show think that they do. But I'm also not the person that is like Mr. Mackey from South Park. Algorithms are bad, okay? Okay? They're bad. Without understanding the intricacies of it. There's a lot of things you wouldn't be able to do without algorithms. I'm just talking about computer algorithms. You wouldn't have your phone if it wasn't for our computer algorithms. And I don't think the answer is to go off in the woods and live by yourself. It may be tempting at times. And there are some people that are very self-sustainable that could do it. But I don't think that's why God put us on this planet anyway, was to not connect with other people. And I don't think that technology in and of itself is bad. I know some people may argue about where that technology came from, but it goes back to the building blocks, right? You know, who created the building blocks for technology. Well, I believe God did. Even to create a computer chip comes from the earth. Everything does. So again, how we use things is always indicative of whether it's good or bad. And we can say that with anything. Now, artificial intelligence is usually defined in two ways, and they're both contradictory. On the one hand, artificial intelligence is intelligence that mimics human intelligence and or behavior. And on the other hand, artificial intelligence is intelligence that is opposite to natural, i.e. human intelligence. So the first type of definition measures the success of AI in terms of fidelity to human performance, while the second type measures the success of AI against an ideal performance measure called rationality. So this is where that Turing test comes into place, the one I talked about earlier that was created by Alan Turing. Basically, the AI either mimics human ability to the point it's almost indistinguishable, or it operates completely different than the way a human operates because its rationality or logic comes into place where a human's emotions will come into place. And this is the two ways that artificial intelligence works. Now, I know that there are people in Silicon Valley that would like the AI to work more like a human. And I will talk about that here, where you've got these three different industries that are predicated on using artificial intelligence to essentially prop their entire industries up. You got the military, who wants to use smart war machines and are expected, and we know this, to make human-style decisions immediately on the battlefield, which increases the efficiency of their performance while reducing human casualties. So what they're saying is they want to be able to put out artificial intelligent soldiers who will make quick, fast, algorithmic decisions on the battlefield and can battle each other where no human beings will be hurt, which is absolutely ludicrous to say that no human beings will be hurt. We know how this goes. And what happens if a computer program goes rogue? That can happen. A computer program will stop working. It'll malfunction. I mean, that's the stuff we see in the movies. You know, when I talked about Terminator earlier, prime example of, you know, the AI becoming self-aware. And I don't think necessarily self-aware, but more so malfunctioning. But this is what the military wants to do. They're implementing more and more artificial intelligence into their operations. The sex industry, huge, absolutely huge, that's moving into AI. Now, we already know that on Instagram, X, any social media site, there are, for lack of a better word, Instagram models that aren't real. They are AI-generated models that have OF accounts set up that guys are paying for. People are paying for an algorithm. There are people that are creating AI models that people are paying for. And that's just one part of it. We know that they're upping the ante on sex dolls, smart sex dolls. They're expected to completely substitute sex partners and then probably even life partners for humans by simulating human sex and communication behavior. They will highly likely offer superhuman sex and communication experiences as any new medium first performs old functions and then creates its own environment. So these smart sex dolls, which the sex industry is pushing, they want to replace humans. It's very similar to the military-industrial complex. They want to replace humans with AI-generated, programmed, for lack of a better word, people to supplant humans. And not just that, but even in the workforce, they want to do the same thing. If you remember a book that came out in 2020, this was in July. It was called The Great Reset. It was written by Klaus Schwab and Thierry Mallaret. And I read it back in 2020. I remember when it came out. I remember when the term Great Reset came out, that it was touted as a conspiracy theory for the longest. I know mainstream media was saying that it was a conspiracy theory. It didn't exist. It did exist, though. It was a book that you can go to Amazon right now and buy. And I wouldn't even suggest you do that. There are plenty of reputable sites that you can just download the PDF from. I would just go to Google, type in The Great Reset, Klaus Schwab. That's the easiest way to do it. You know, he's the villain of all villains, at least in the truther world. Just type in his name, type in the name of the book. You should, and type in PDF in the search engine. You'll find it. You can download it for free. Read it. It's an interesting read. But one of the phases that he and Theory talk about is the automated AI sector is going to take over the human part of the workforce. And he basically said it's going to piss off humans. He even brought up the U.S. as a signifier for that and said that they will be the toughest country to subject to this, for lack of a better word, one world government. He basically says globalism. That's the term that he uses in the book. That's what it is. He wants to create a one world environment that we can all have interconnectivity with global currency, all these different things. But he talks about part of getting us to that point is the AI workforce. It's going to take over because there's going to be a lot of things that humans are not going to be able to do as well, especially like in factories, in the computer sector, outside the people who are writing the programs, obviously. There are so many different parts of different industries. And we just looked at two right there, the military and the sex industry, where these AI programs are already taking over. We know that there are apps right now. You can go download on your phone. You can create an AI avatar to interact with you like a human being and will create whatever you want. It'll be your own little life within that app. Replica, that's one of them. And it'll do, at least visually, whatever you want. But what it's doing is, it's detaching people from reality. But that's the easiest way to slide one over people. Whatever you're trying to manipulate, whatever you're trying to do, keep people distracted. Now, generally, I deter away from that buzzword of distraction because I'm telling you right now, you know anything about the truth of community, they will use distraction to prove any point that they want. If they don't like it, it's a distraction. You know, UFOs are the best one. It's a distraction. Nobody can ever tell me a distraction from what? The government. Well, what about the government? That's a distraction because the government itself could be a distraction. Everything could be a distraction. Then things could be real. Maybe it's not a distraction. Maybe it's real, but maybe the way they're conveying it to us is manipulated. We got to start thinking of it that way too. Everything's not a distraction. You know, anytime people use that buzzword distraction, it's just a cover for not really knowing enough about a subject to talk about it with an educated point of view. Now, if you come and say, this is a distraction and here are the pieces of why it's a distraction, use that as a distraction because they want to supplement human connectivity with AI bots who take the place of people, who literally distract you by creating a romantic partner for you, which is so crazy to think about. But that's where the sex industry's moved to. You get sex workers complaining, not that they're on a right path. And I think that there are better ways to make money and provide for yourself without selling your body. That's my personal opinion. But even those people are going to be without jobs. It's going to be like Westworld. If you've never seen Westworld, the movie or the show, that's how it starts. It's Western world that rich people can go to, interact with all of these AI robots that look like humans, feel like humans, talk like humans. They can go there and do a myriad of things, good or bad. But that's where these industries are moving towards. It's not just the stuff of fiction anymore, fantasy anymore. This stuff's becoming a reality. And in that way, I would like to use the word distraction because it is. It's a distraction from real connectivity with human beings. Back to go outside, touch grass, get your tail out the hole. It's literally that. Like, you need to. If you're getting caught down that rabbit hole, do what you can to get yourself out. That's all I got to say. It's definitely set up for us to not be able to communicate with each other in a way that's healthy or beneficial. Now, the third thing that Andrew Muir talks about outside of the military-industrial complex and the sex industry is media. Now, He says that news writing algorithms aim to eventually replace human journalists, no matter how this innovation is currently thought of. Even if someone sees robo-journalists just as helpers, a kind of intern in the newsrooms, the ultimate completion of the idea of news writing algorithms is for them to write the news instead of humans and in a way no worse than humans. So back to that Turing test where you can't tell the difference between an AI-written article and an actual journalist that writes it. Those names at the type of those articles are fake. They're fake names. The pictures that they have with the names are fake. They're AI-generated pictures. These are not real journalists. They still want you to believe that it's a real journalist because there's a large contingent of people that if they realized that billions of articles every year are written by AI-generated programs, they wouldn't trust the information that's coming out. Now, I'm not saying that this information is always false. A lot of it's very stats-driven, built around statistics. You know, in that way, an AI algorithm is going to be spot on. It's pulling from where it needs to build the data in a way that you can consume it and understand what you need to from it. It might tell you how many tornadoes happened in the Midwest in 2023. I'd probably trust it. It's probably not lying to us. But then when it gets into the nuances of politics, the nuances of propaganda, that's when these parameters have been put into place to give it to us in a way that they want us to consume, whether it's to make us angry, sad, happy, fearful. It's set to do that. Again, these are algorithms that are training your emotions. Think about that. Most of what you're consuming, that you're getting angry over, fearful over, happy over, whatever it is, isn't even made by human beings. This is where we're at. But I think once we understand that, we can operate in a better way that's more clear-headed. We don't let it control us. We can consume the information and understand that, okay, let me look at it from an objective lens, critical lens. I'm going to take it in, but then I'm also going to do like a computer and push it back out where it doesn't need to stay in my sphere. Your brain's a computer, one of the most powerful computers on the planet. Understand that. And they're using these algorithms to try to control your computer. Now, when it comes to media, there are two types of AI, and you got narrow artificial intelligence, and it's a specific type of AI in which a learning algorithm is designed to perform a single task and knowledge gained from performing that task will not automatically be applied to other tasks. So it is a singular task and it's got an end. And that's it. That is what narrow artificial intelligence is. And that's what media consumption comes from generally. Now, general artificial intelligence seeks to mimic complex thought processes. Narrow AI is designed to successfully complete a task without human assistance, which I just said. So the general artificial intelligence is created to get as close to a human being as possible. Now, they'd like to move media to that. They'd like to move the military-industrial complex to that. That's what they're trying to move the sex industry at, but they're not there yet. But narrow artificial intelligence, you know, ChatGPT is a good example of what narrow artificial intelligence is. You're putting something in there, it's giving you a result, A to B. I mean, it's more complex than A to B, but that's just an easy way for me to say it. General artificial intelligence is Arnold Schwarzenegger, Terminator. I know I've used Terminator 3 times, but I love Terminator and Skynet and all that good stuff. It's a very dystopian way of looking at where things could go. I don't know if necessarily it's going to get to that point. I think there are other aspects in the spiritual world that I think would come into play where it's not all man versus machine, obviously. But when we're talking about that aspect of the takeover, Terminator is always like the prime example. There are other movies too, but Terminator I always like to go to. It's probably one of my favorite. So we were just talking about the difference between narrow AI and general AI. And I told you that narrow AI is generally connected to media. And we were talking about the sex industry is more the general AI. So the demand in the sex industry for AI is well supported by market forces and cultural changes. However, the application of AI in the sex industry is complicated because it requires physical embodiment and extremely complex behavioral simulation. So sex-based AI will most likely arrive later than media-based AI, which doesn't require any physical embodiment and personal behavioral peculiarities. So those peculiarities are the proclivities or the wants from the human, from the AI itself. So the AI is going to have to evolve to the point of it's going to act and do what the human being, its partner, wants it to do. And it's going to have to evolve with it, like an actual partner. That's what they're moving to. That's what the sex industry wants to move to. They already are. They're making smart sex dolls. Like, that's, look it up. I mean, don't look it up to join in, but look it up. There are articles out there about it. They want to take us away from what God has put us on this earth to do. And that's part of it. That's part of that transhumanism. Transhumanism is not just the idea of I can replace my arm with cybernetics. That's a version of it. But that's not what transhumanism is completely. Transhumanism is also taking us away from the connectivity we're supposed to have with other human beings. And that's what the sex industry is out to do. Like I said, they've already got the apps that do it with your little Twitter fingers. You can sit there all day, and these people do. I mean, there are people that are married, literally, to their AI program. Think about that. That's just so crazy to me. Now, this is June of this year. We're talking about the sex industry. June of this year, people in Berlin will be able to book an hour with an AI sex doll as the world's first cyber brothel rolls out the service following a test phase. Customers will be able to interact verbally with the AI dolls as well as physically. So the founder and owner of Cyber Brothel said that many people feel more comfortable sharing private matters with a machine because it doesn't judge. And this goes back to, we have lost so much touch with reality and interacting with people that we're more comfortable having a conversation with a doll. And listen, it's not just about the sexual interaction with these dolls. There's that part of it. And I'm sure there's some very twisted things that come out of that. And it's actually talked about in this particular article that I pulled up about this whole Cyber Brothel in Berlin. But people will go and just talk to these dolls because somebody's listening to them. Somebody's interacting to them in a positive way. And it's part and part, right? The age of social media has created such an angst within people to where we're constantly slandering, constantly attacking, constantly feeling like somebody's attacking us to the point that now we want to go pay an hour in Berlin to talk to a doll. And I get the relations part of it, but there's that also piece where people are just trying to have somebody to talk to. And you've got companies like this exploiting it. We were talking about Replica. Split Metrics revealed that AI companion apps reached, listen to this number, 225 million downloads in the Google Play Store. 225 million people are creating AI companions globally. Let that sink in. It's how lonely people are. But the problem is, the loneliness comes from literally boxing ourselves in, not being encouraged to interact with other people. Now, I know there are things that have happened in the world that have pushed some of this along. We talked about 2020 earlier. We all know that. We all know how people had little to no connection with other people for a while. But that was already to push what was already going on. People were already being recluse. People were already not wanting to interact with other people. That just pushed some people over the edge, pushed a lot of people towards it. And these AI companion apps came out around this time. I mean, they were being flirted with before. I'm not saying they weren't out, but I'm just saying they hit their crescendo into now because of that. Is people were lonely. Now, this article also talks about the problem with AI in the adult entertainment business. And they said it's sounded off alarm bells. The problem lies in the bias inherent in generative AI, which produces new content based on the data in which it's been trained. So you got some of these sex researchers that say that it's pulling from a database, but it's retrograding gender stereotypes about sex and pleasure that get encoded into sex chatbots. Listen, it's just pulling from the data pool. It's hilarious to think that the program is being biased because of the data pool it's pulling from. No, that just lets you know where the data's at. I'm sure they will create bots for whoever. It's not going to be just for, you know, a certain gender or a certain group of people. I'll tell you that right now. But to say that that's the biggest red flag about this cyber brothel shows you where we're at as a society. They're not up in arms about there being these dolls, these smart dolls. They're more concerned about inclusivity with the smart dolls, which is, you know, I try to wrap my mind around that. And it's just kind of let me know where we're really at. Now, one of the other arguments, and I did like that there were a few people that came out that were, hey, here's some red flags. They found themes of abuse, violence, underage relationships with these dolls. You don't think that there will be people who have certain avenues they want to go down. That's the best way to say it. And they'll use these outlets to get those things out of their system. And honestly, it's not going to get out of their system. It's only going to escalate it. It's like the serial killer, when they're younger, they're killing small animals. That's all the dolls are going to be. It's going to be a small animal. It's still, they're still at some point going to want the real reaction, real thing. I think for the most part. I know there's going to be probably some, once this thing gets big, you'll have some underground brothels, some underground places that will be like, this is the substitute so you don't have to do the things that society won't let you do. Again, it's a dangerous road. None of this in this particular industry is good. And just a side note, the apps for this, they're going to share and sell your personal data. They're going to find out everything about you to really manipulate you. Then you're using these AI programs to create a perfect partner. Well, then they're going to know how to send certain ads your way, how to sell certain things to you, how to box you in the way that they want to box you in with the information that they want to give to you through the media. It's not only this weird sexual space, it's also data driven. Control you by the data that you put in. The best part about it is the companies within the adult entertainment industry that are pushing this AI technology, they acknowledge that there is a need for caution, but maintain that AI has an important role to play to enhance the sexual experience of its customers rather than replace it, which is an important line to draw. See, that's how they're going to sell it. It's going to be the experience you can't get in real life. What happens when you get in that experience and then you go back to real life and you can't have that again? What happens? Well, it starts escalating back to the small animal analogy that I gave you, especially if it's something along those lines where it's really depraved. This is where we're going. And these are these three industries where you're seeing the AI specifically take over, and not to the point that it's going to help you retrieve data to get you information, but they want to replace humans completely. Now, in this paper, Muir goes back to the Turing test, and he talks about that media-based narrow AI is already here, which we explained what narrow AI already is. It is only the inertia of perception together with the defense mechanisms of people, both in the industry and in the audience, that prevent the public from admission of the fact that media-based narrow AI is already among us. Many have already interacted with it, most likely without knowing it. And it goes back to people you're arguing with in the comments on social media posts, articles that you're reading with the fake names, fake pictures. It's like you're pulling the wool over your own eyes and you want to believe that there are people giving you this information. I can tell you right now the amount of news that comes out, and I don't mean just political news, but all news, sports, entertainment, everything, majority of it is written by AI. And your idea that it's real people is only there to make you feel better about consuming it. And I think once we get to a place that we understand what we're consuming, It's not wrong to consume it, but know what it is. You know, take it for what it is. It is an AI program that probably pumped this out in 3 minutes. Being honest with you. I mean, back to the Turing test, there are two main journalistic functions reviewed regarding the execution by robo-journalists: the ability to process the information and the ability to express information writing style. Now, against that argument is the robot's incapability to create, to understand beauty. Now, in this review that Mir does, he says, for every argument on what robots cannot do, there's more convincing argument for robots can do instead and humans cannot. So, yeah, it might not be as pretty, which we were just talking about. It might not be as pleasing when you're reading it. But the idea is that the robo-journalist outdoes the organic form of journalism in all characteristics regarding data processing. We know that. As smart as we can be, we cannot process data the same way that an algorithm can. It's just impossible. And it can compete with humans in the part of the job that relates to writing and style. So it can mimic that. It can mimic writing and style because those are parameters that you can put into an algorithm. So it's going to get close. It might not have a lot of the filler that would bring you in as a reader, but that's not what you're there for, data-driven journalism. Your articles where you're trying to get to A, B, to C to find out about something, and you want to look at the statistics, you want to look at why this happened, boom, 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 you don't need flashy words for it. You really don't. And that part, I agree with the AI. I agree with the fact that if you're putting out statistic-driven data, obviously the AI is the best way to go. The problem is the people that are programming these algorithms don't have our best interests at heart, at least in my opinion. It's controllable. As much as the AI evolves, the programmer has still programmed it to do certain things. We always have to think about that. Now, also, we were talking about how the AI works within journalism. Well, here's a good one for you, and this is the one that people complain about, and rightfully so in some places, is the commentary moderation. So if you notice something over the past 15 years, and I remember when it happened in ESPN, there used to be a comment section on every article, and people would go there, they would comment, complain, or just talk about whatever it was, and they stopped it. I remember almost universally, all these different news sites stopped it. And the reason that they said that it was free access to commenting often provokes trolls and spammers. We know that's true. We know we see trolls, spammers all the time in the comments. But it also shuts down the ability to voice an opinion or connect with people who think just like you. So a lot of times these articles will come out written by AI, and people would complain about the direction that the article's going. And I think it's also a way to get us off the track that a lot of this stuff was already written by AI by cutting off the comments. So at the end of the 2010s is when you'll notice all of these news sites pretty much cut off commenting. But then you'd see a resurgence of it in the late 2010s because they found a solution. And a solution was to apply algorithms to regulate commentaries. And for example, the Washington Post and New York Times, in collaboration with the Mozilla Foundation, founded the Coral Project, a project that produces open source software to maintain online communications within and outside newsrooms. Using algorithms, editors and reporters can survey readers, moderate comment sections, and engage the audience in many other ways. So the algorithm, the AI, is a moderator. And you know how like on YouTube, you can have live chat rooms and you got moderators in the room, actual people who can moderate the conversation. You just listen, you're going to get trolls, you're going to get spammers, you're going to get people out of pocket. It's not to stifle free speech, but if people start going crazy, then yeah, you just got to be blocked. I'm just being honest with you. But this is different. This is an AI algorithm that is set up as a moderator, but it's given buzzwords, trigger words, parameters to keep people within what they want you to talk about. This has been implemented in all aspects of social media as well. So when you think you have a post that's been deleted or you get automatically banned or blocked, guys, generally speaking, it's not a person. It's an AI program because it's got a certain amount of parameters that is stopping you from saying something that is against those parameters. TikTok, Instagram, X, all of them have it. And this is just back to, I want to get us out of this idea that there are people like this. Scroll. And if people are listening and not watching me on YouTube or Rumble, I am mimicking a typing sound and I'm saying scroll, like somebody's actually doing that all day. They're not. The most you'll get from a person in a customer service on TikTok, Instagram, X, or a fact-checking organization is the ability to reach out to somebody to appeal whatever they've, you know, blocked you for or flagged you for. That you may be able to get a real person then. And even then, it could be AI. Let's just be honest. But I just think that we are very delusional in what we're consuming. It's all AI driven. Essentially, it saves the companies way more money because they're just spending money on the program and the program is giving them X amount of workers that they don't have to pay. They're making more money. They're way more money. So New York Times uses another algorithm to host better conversations. It is reported that NYT turned to Perspective, a free tool developed by Jigsaw and Google that uses machine learning to make it easier to host good conversations online. What's good, right? You're the answer to what's good. See, that's where we're at with the parameters. Perspective finds patterns in data to spot abusive language. Again, what's the abusive language? Or online harassment, and it scores comments based on the perceived impact they might have on a conversation. Publishers can use that information to give real-time feedback to commenters and help human moderators sort comments more quickly. And that means news organizations and content publishers can grow their comment section instead of turning them off and can provide their readers a better, more engaging community forum. On the outside, you know, just on the surface level, it sounds good because, yeah, you got trolls, you got people acting a fool, you got people that aren't contributing anything beneficial to the conversation. But also, the negative part of it is you are stifling the ability to communicate about whatever this article's about to someone else. And then if people are realizing, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right, well, you've already set up the parameters on these trigger words to automatically block them out of the conversation because they're not saying or doing what you think they should be doing. Again, this is where these algorithms have moved towards and are evolving even more so towards when it comes to media. And lastly, I'm going to end on a specific type of AI algorithm that is already being implemented. And, you know, it's a little leery to think about that this is a thing. And some people that are listening to this may have heard of some of this already before, but I'm going to break it down for you a little bit here. So a part of this paper that Muir wrote, he does suggest that similar to QuakeBot, which is a AI generating program with the Los Angeles Times that collects and compares data, but the robot also composes ready to publish text reports. Now he attributes these text reports to criminal reporting, and it filters and categorizes data, puts them on a map, and so on. So it pinpoints where these criminal activities are happening. It collects the data, and it writes the article, or it gives the information to a journalist so they can report it, however that works, right? This made me think about, though, on a deeper scale of the Chicago Minority Report. Now, if you remember the Minority Report, it was a movie with Tom Cruise where basically, these artificial intelligence programs would pinpoint a crime before it happens by using said algorithms. They say, you're going to commit that crime, so we're going to arrest you before you actually do it, which is really crazy. It's kind of like this anime that I really like too called Psycho Pass, which is an absolutely amazing anime. Very similar in that aspect. But there is a Chicago Minority Report, and this is real. So scientists at the University of Chicago developed a new algorithm that forecasts crime with up to 90% accuracy by analyzing data and learning patterns. The AI-powered system is also able to predict crimes with an accuracy of 90%, and their systems don't require precogs, which if you watch the Minority Report, precogs are individuals that possess a psychic ability to see events in the future, primarily premeditated murders. So these people were, they're hooked up to these artificial intelligence data programs, and they're able to in conjunction with them, point out these people that are going to commit crimes. But this particular program is just the algorithm. That's it. It's now hooked up to people or precogs that can look into this. But again, if you know anything about the movie, that the algorithm itself is also pinpointing this out. It's not just the precogs. It's a manipulation of the precogs. So this advanced algorithm works by learning patterns in time and geographic locations from public data on violent and property crimes. According to the University of Chicago, the new model isolates crime by looking at the time and spatial coordinates of discrete events and detecting patterns to predict future events. Divides the city into spatial tiles roughly 1,000 feet across, predicts crime within these areas instead of relying on traditional neighborhood or political boundaries, which are also subject to bias. So they're putting together a minority report as we speak. This is just what they're telling us. We don't even know what they're not telling us. And this is another form of using a algorithm or program to control what's happening in certain neighborhoods. I know there was a racial component that was talked about in this idea of the Chicago Minority Report. I can see some of it. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're of a certain racial persuasion and you're in one of these sectors, one of these spatial sectors, and this algorithm pinpoints you as you're going to commit a crime before you commit it, and you were never going to do that, there is a component to that. You know, I'm not one of those people that thinks that, you know, race doesn't exist or there aren't problems with all of that. Now, I do have different ideas of how it's trickled down throughout the years. I think a lot of history has been omitted and we don't exactly know everything that's happened in the past. And I think a lot of it they have hyped up and pushed out in a way to keep us divided. And maybe I'll do a show on that one day. Maybe I don't, but that's just generalizing what I think about it. But it doesn't mean that there aren't, you know, racial divides that exist within the country. It's divides that they created. And this Chicago Minority Report seems to kind of feed on that. And the people that are looking at it from that angle who live in those communities aren't necessarily wrong. Now, I know some people would argue, well, there's a lot of crime in these areas. We can talk about why there's crime in those areas, too. It's not always the people who are committing them's fault. Now, it is their responsibility when they commit a crime. But when you're packing people into certain areas like pack rats and you invite this type of structure and environment around people, that's what you're going to get. And I do think that's by design. I absolutely think that's by design. And I think that in these areas is where they're going to test these type of algorithms, these minority reports first. And I think it's going to spread out from there where it hits everybody. But I do think this is something that's also coming down the pipe that we also need to keep an eye on when it comes to these algorithms and what they're going to do to replace human beings and actual cognitive thinking in the future. Well, guys, I had a great time today like I always do. This is a blast, and I love talking about algorithms and how they are implemented into our society, how they're being implemented into our society. The second part, next week, we will talk about entities and their connection within the AI world and within algorithms, and how that also can connect back to everything we talked about today with just the human to AI interaction on a basic level. And I wanted to build to that because I think that's the crazier aspect of where the AI is moving to. But I think this sets a good foundation today of what that means for us and how we can just be cautious and careful. Doesn't mean we're not supposed to consume, but we need to be careful about how we're consuming things. And again, I've said it probably 4 times on the show. I'll say it a bunch more. Go outside, touch grass, get your child out of the hole. Don't get so deep rooted in like, oh, Skynet's coming. It's coming to get me. Like, that's not how we're supposed to act. We need to be cautious and careful. We need to walk accordingly, but we also need to not live in fear. And I promote that big time on the show. And I know there are people that push back against me on that. I've seen them in the comments. I see people that get irritated with my positive outlook on life. And I do think that I feel bad for people like that because they have so trained themselves to stay in a rabbit hole to the point that they can't interact with other people and they live in fear and they live in despair and they've taken the black pill. It's a doomer pill where it's all going to hell and we've got no hope. And I don't think that's at all how we're supposed to live life. And I don't think that's the answer. I'm not saying that things aren't moving a certain way, but we don't have to let that control us because they want that to control us too. Now, before I get out of here, I am going to read some reviews and comments like I always do. We're going to start with Apple Podcasts. We've got Justice682. Well-researched. Joel, you bring well-reasoned and balanced thought to these discussions. I'm loving this series on the Solomon Islands. Appreciate it. And by the time I've read this, the Solomon Islands series is over with. If you haven't heard it and this is your first episode tuning in to Free the Rabbits, go check out the Solomon Islands, Secrets of the Solomon Islands. It's a 4-part series where I break down all of the weird stuff said to be coming out of the Solomon Islands. We've got C. Mills. He's back. Joel has such a great approach to these conspiratorial rabbit hole type topics. He enters into topics with an unbiased opinion. I really feel like he does tons of research to bring in all sides of the conversation, as well as often bringing in new information I've never heard on topics I thought I've heard a lot on. I should be more wary, though, as he is, in fact, a Nephilim ginger. I'm kidding. Glad Joel is back to podcasting. Yes, I'm indeed a Nephilim ginger. Can't help it, but good thing for me, I believe in the theory of good Nephilim, and I believe I'm going to be all right. Appreciate that, C. Mills. We've got Schlutopia, a welcome reprieve. Rabbits is the wellness spa rehab we need after we've woken up and realized the world is not what we thought it was, but it'll be okay because now we're going inward and focusing on our spiritual connections. We've done all the drugs, red pills at the after party that turn into black pills at the after party, and now it's time to go outside and listen to all this awesome podcast while we touch all the grass. I love hearing Joel's take on things because it's the reminder I need that the world is only as crazy as I allow my brain to think it is, and I can change my mind anytime I want. Do yourself a solid and listen to this podcast. Your brain will thank you. Thank you so much, Utopia. That's exactly where we all should be. And listen, I have to remind myself all the time of it. I'm not perfect. That's why I created this podcast. It's not just for you. It's for me too, because it allows me to look at these topics and then look at them from a very critical thinking lens. And I hope to be able to go outside and touch grass and get my own tail out of the hole from time to time, because we can all get caught up in it. We go to YouTube. We've got Owen1737. Amount of research you share with us is awesome. I really appreciate that, Owen. We've got Panarse662. I hope the giants are still on the island living there. Man, even though I'll be scary for the villagers, it's also a blessing and unique. Listen, I want to go there, and I've said that before, and I'll say it again. Anywhere that there are giants, supposedly, I want to go there. We've got Zoom2316. Go explore bit. Bring a crew with RPGs and Gatling guns and flame grenade throwers just in case. Smiley face. Sounds like a good time, man. Solomon Islands, deep, deep, deep in the caves with a flamethrower. What could go wrong? All right, guys, I had a blast again today. For those of you who haven't heard me do anything on Spotify in a while, Spotify changed how they're doing comments there. I don't receive them anymore. And I don't know if it's even available for everyone to even give comments. I know they were supposed to change it up to where it was going to make it easier. It's not easier. So I'll probably move away from doing anything Spotify based with the comments. Now, in saying that, if you have access to Spotify, please go to Spotify and give me 5 stars. It helps. If you can, go to Apple Podcast, give me 5 stars, write a review. It helps. It helps that evil AI algorithm understand that people need to listen to Free the Rabbits. Same thing with YouTube. Write a comment, like, subscribe, share the show. How many times can I say it? Share the show wherever you're consuming your podcast from. Get it out to anybody you can. 5 stars all the way around, that helps grow the show. I say this all the time. I know how many people follow the show on all the platforms. I could only imagine if all those people were to give me a 5-star review to go and do it. You're already following the show. Why not give a 5-star review? It helps. Like, I would love to see a week where everybody that follows goes and gives a 5-star review. how crazy amount of reviews would help the show grow. It does. But to all the people that already have, I really appreciate it. And to the people that are going to, I really appreciate it too. You guys have been awesome. I have a blast every week with you, giving you this information. Get ready for next week. Entities and the AI coming. It's going to be a blast. But for now, go outside, touch grass, get your tail out the hole.
The last time you had to cancel a subscription. There was probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Wix is the website builder that just keeps on giving. It's giving,
I just built my whole site in under an hour.
It's giving,
I actually made that?
Whoa.
It's giving,
our sales are through the roof.
So whether you need help expressing yourself or just need something to make your life easier, Wix has you covered. Try it out at Wix.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply. QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.
This holiday season, make your celebration unforgettable at Barcelona Restaurant. Gather friends and colleagues for a festive party, or share the spirit of Spain with Barcelona gift cards. Visit BarcelonaColumbus.com.